Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. I have two very special guests this morning. First up is Rachel Kushner. She's a two-time National Book Award finalist, and she's here to talk about her dazzling New York Times bestseller, Creation Lake, which is out now. She's also author of The Flamethrowers and The Mars Room. I want to tell you a little bit about it. This is an incredible book, and, well, let me just give you a little bit of background information. If you want to find out just how much this book is gaining attention, you can visit the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And it's been a finalist for the Booker Prize, longlisted for the National Book Award, an instant New York Times an indie bestseller, a New York Times Book Review Editor's Choice, and a number one indie next pick. So I'm actually going to let Rachel, who's standing by, tell you more about it, but I'm really excited to have her on, and she's joining us now. Hi, Rachel.
Yes, hi. I am here.
How are you?
Doing just fine, thank you.
How does it feel to have all these accolades on your new book? I mean, it's outstanding. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. It feels lucky. When I write a novel, I'm really answering to some higher inner critic, mm-hmm. almost like a personal god. I'm not really thinking about readers per se. I don't know if I could write with that sort of guesswork of what other people would be pleased by or be interested in. So when I write a book, it feels very personal, and I didn't exactly anticipate that a novel about, you know, Neanderthals and anarchists and spies
right.
would necessarily be a New York Times bestseller. But sometimes you just catch a ride on the culture, like mm-hmm. something in the zeitgeist.
Yes.
And it's just been so neat and so gratifying to make other people happy. I loved writing the book. It was the most fun I've ever had. And if there are readers out there who feel that pleasure themselves while reading it, it's very lucky for me. I'm also just home today for the first time in 3 months, basically.
Whoa.
I've been traveling. So I plan to take a little time off and rest.
That's good. You need that. And home is, where is it, East Coast?
Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. So West Coast. Okay. I'm in Orange County. There's a lot of things I want to unpack here because I'm a writer. I know I have a lot of listeners that are writers. But first and foremost, where did this idea come from? Was it completely formulated? I mean, a lot of times when we write, things start to unravel and peel back layers in that flow state.
Yeah. So I tend to choose novel topics that have something to do with me, where I feel I can inhabit the world of the novel with authority, but more importantly, subjects that are already kind of that I'm organically accumulating knowledge of and understanding of. And in this case, I go to France every summer with my husband and our son.
Okay.
And my husband has a connection to this ultra-left world of the commune that I depict in my novel. And there is a real-life commune called Tarnac in the Northern Corrèze that was raided by the French police in late 2008, around Christmas time.
Wow.
And the French police carted off their entire library of something like 3,000 books as quote-unquote evidence against these people whom we knew, and we watched the court case in the French judicial system sort of wind its way through and result in no convictions whatsoever. There was a British undercover agent who had infiltrated those people and was really a kind of like in a novel, an agent provocateur who is inventing evidence where none existed.
Wow.
And
yeah.
I had asked myself what the psyche and mentality is of the person who dissimulates to that degree
mm-hmm.
and is not operating on a sense of their own belief in right and wrong, like, oh, these people, you know, present a genuine threat to the energy sector. I mean, regardless of how one feels about that, there are some people who, you know, are against the sabotage of equipment. But there were cases of these agents, like the British agent, and there was also a female FBI agent who did something similar, where they are the ones who are planning political violence. So how are they justifying all of this?
Exactly.
And, like, what is the color of the cynicism, the mentality? And my narrator, Sadie, or so she claims is her name, is kind of my answer to that. But the milieu of the people whose commune I call Le Moulin, it just means the mill, that is very familiar to me from my personal life
mm-hmm.
Because I've been to these places in France and I'm interested in this history. So it's, you know, it's spending time in the region. It's caring about nature, having some sense of what the natural landscape feels like, textures of it.
Sure.
The farmers, what they're like, what language they speak at home. In the case of this region where I set the book, sometimes it's not French. It's Occitan that they speak at home. And also a relationship that people in this part of rural France have to prehistory, because that whole area is undergirded by caves. And there is this feeling when you're walking on a path, you know, a path that's been continuously used by people for 500,000 years, you can feel that you're sort of always in dialogue with times that came before the now.
That's incredible. So did you spend a lot of time formulating this book idea there or when you came home?
Well, there isn't a before and an after, because I go to France every summer.
Okay.
My husband, who has a PhD in comparative literature and translates French philosophy and is involved in French theory and, you know, French history and culture, as am I. Our son is bilingual. He wants to study French literature in college next year. He's a senior right now. It's just an ongoing component of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I got the idea to write the book around 2008 when, as I mentioned, we watched some people we knew be raided by the French police. And I think I really started thinking then of setting a novel this area, this region that I know well. And the situation of the novel would be these people being raided by the French police. I didn't start actually working on the book until after I finished my last novel, The Mars Room,
mm-hmm.
in 2018. And I didn't at first. I had the milieu. I had the young activists who formed this commune. I had their mentor, my fictional mentor, Bruno Lacombe, who is somebody I think of as a kind of refugee of the long French 20th century, which is a world I know a lot about. I've seen a lot of French movies. I know some of the philosophers of that generation. And so it's a kind of a tender opportunity for me to render the kind of thinking that comes from the optimism and then disappointment of all of these different, like, waves of activism in the 20th century and early 21st. What I didn't have was the narrator. I knew it would be an American narrator and a woman,
mm-hmm.
but I hadn't figured out who she would be. What was her occasion for arriving to this place and being among these young activists who are somewhat hermetic and also, frankly, paranoid, and for good reason, because they've been infiltrated by undercover agents
sure.
in the past.
Yeah.
And at first, I was just, like, moving through the different more obvious occasions for her visit. Like, oh, is she an activist who wants to sort of glom on to the movement? Because there have been many people like that
right.
who sort of show up. They've heard about the place. They want to be accepted. And it seemed like a trajectory like that would involve disillusionment. You know, she'd get there. And then after a while, something would happen that would sour her on the experience, and that was not what I wanted. Another way to do things is to make her, God forbid, a writer. There are people whose instinct very strongly is autofiction and who have a flair for it,
yes,
do it well. And it's not my instinct. To me, the novel and fiction is an occasion, as I think of it, to have a kind of radical encounter with my own unconscious. And I tend to want to build a parallel universe that has a kind of hallucinogenic envelope around it. It's like this world, but it has glints and sparkles to it that I never could have imagined until I got there,
yeah,
but which seem inevitable and correct in terms of reproducing the truths of this world,
mm-hmm,
but in with a strangeness in another realm. I'm not that interested in my own life as a writer to the degree that I would want to put that life into a novel. So it took me a while, and then suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, this woman is an enemy. She's one of those people, those infiltrators,
mm-hmm,
who come in, buy an alias, pretend to be what they're not, for the purpose of destroying the lives of other people. So that part took a while to develop.
So I want to ask you this. I have a bunch of questions, and thank you for sharing all that. First of all, have you ever seen the show Alias with Jennifer Garner?
No.
Oh, you've got to.
I I have a weird bias about television. I understand that it's going to seem very snobbish,
okay,
but I don't watch it.
That's okay. I don't watch very much television at all, like rarely. I'll watch stuff on Netflix or Amazon Prime. I don't spend the time watching, perhaps because you're a writer, and maybe, do you feel like it's a passive experience and it's not a good use of your time?
I don't know if that's it. I think it's something about the serial form. With the, I've watched a few shows, and I feel like in order to generate and sustain narrative propulsion,
mm-hmm,
they fall prey to certain kind of plot tricks that don't interest me so much. I'm more interested in the feature-length film. That could be just because of my generation and my age, I don't know. But yeah, when it's time to relax, I prefer to read a novel,
mm-hmm,
watch a movie, or listen to classical music.
That's all right. So when you were creating this character, Sadie, did you see yourself in that character at all? Could you imagine yourself, Sadie?
No. In order to write in the first person, which I have done a few times now in my novels, I did it with The Flamethrowers and with The Mars Rim, and now with this novel, Creation Lake, I have to really feel that the I that I'm embodying,
mm-hmm,
is not at all me. It has to be very clearly the strange dimensions of someone else's consciousness.
Okay.
If it were me, it would feel kind of like, it would feel brackish, which is to say, not me and not me. It would sort of be uselessly familiar. So I always need to feel like I know this woman and I can see her and she feels real to me. Whereas if she were a little bit me, she wouldn't feel real. She would just feel like an alter ego.
Okay.
So she has a lot of qualities that are very explicitly and secretly, for me, exactly 180 degrees from what I am.
Gotcha.
And that allowed me to sort of draw out the lineaments of her character. She walks into a room and thinks that she can sense weakness in other people that they themselves can't sense. And I'm not like that at all. I'm much more, you know, trying to apprehend what impression I'm having on them. Can I modify my behavior to make a better impression? You know, I enjoy being liked by other people. This would never occur to Sadie,
yeah,
at all. She has this confidence and a blunt, cynical instrumentalizing of her body and her looks to get what she wants out of others.
Yeah.
And I'm just not like that. I mean, she's also a cop and a betrayer. And I'm somebody who has now spent decades and decades of my life building community and friendships. I've never blown up a single friendship. Whereas Sadie brags to the reader that she dumps her trash and never cleans it up because she will not be returning to the same place twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that as a kind of metaphor for her treatment of people,
yes,
as well.
Definitely.
I have a soft spot for her because of her sense of humor. And maybe that's the one thing that we share. Maybe Sadie's jokes I find funny because they're actually my jokes to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of her insights are not mine. You know, she says that, for instance, there's no such thing as real charisma, and that charisma just shows you that people need to believe that somebody is special and is kind of projecting this, you know, unique glow. I believe in charisma, like I've witnessed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's real.
Yeah.
But Sadie, when she says that, is on her way to a commune that has a charismatic leader, and she's just attempting to, you know, pop what she thinks of as other people's illusions and their weakness. So, you know, that's part of the trick of the narration, is that she's not me. And I do mean for the reader to be able to look at her and see that what she claims to the reader is not necessarily the case. I mean, she
yeah.
drinks quite heavily.
Right.
She's overconfident. She's made mistakes at her job. She's a disgraced former FBI agent who entrapped this poor young man, but tells the reader that, you know, she is resentful of him. Because of the fact that he got her fired, and it never occurs to her that, you know, that it maybe isn't so fair to other people to try to destroy their lives and send them to prison.
Exactly. So we didn't, Rachel, we didn't start off by, I would love you to give listeners, without giving too much away, what the book is about.
Yeah, sure. Well, the book is about a woman who is working undercover. She's a, you know, disgraced former FBI agent who now makes her living in the sort of shadowy, unregulated world of private surveillance. And on this job that she has taken on at the beginning of this book, she's been sent to a remote rural region of France to infiltrate a group of young people who've decamped from Paris to form a commune and build relationships with the local farmers in this part of France. Sadie, as our narrator tells the reader is her name, plans to get these people raided by the French police. She's also been assigned to tail a French politician and maybe even get him knocked off. Meanwhile, the commune that she's infiltrating has a mentor, a kind of guru, who is a mysterious figure who apparently lives in a cave. His name is Bruno Lacombe. He is a kind of primitivist who is very taken with the world of prehistory and seems somewhat obsessive about the Neanderthals and a time in Europe when nomadic tribes roamed and perhaps lived quite differently than how we live today. He is writing long communiques to the people in the commune by email, and Sadie has hacked into his email and is sharing these emails with the reader. At first, she seems to ridicule much of what Bruno says, but then later on in the book, it seems as if he starts to cast a spell over her. And some of the momentum of the novel is whether or not Sadie is going to pull off this job if the people in the commune are as naive and gullible as she thinks they are, and whether Bruno, you know, will produce some kind of deep effect on this woman who is completely alone and seems to be in something like an existential crisis.
Yeah. That's what it felt like to me. I mean, could you see this as a movie?
Well, you know, I write novels for those novels to exist as novels and for the integrity of a book. And when I finish, I move on to thinking about a new book.
Mm-hmm.
But it just so happens to be the case that this novel was immediately optioned for a movie when it was still in manuscript before it was even published. Yeah. And there's a screenwriter who's been hired and a studio that's behind it.
Not surprising.
And we will see.
Not surprised. Yeah, I mean, I could envision it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's...
Well, yeah, I could see it as a movie.
Completely. I mean, it's... So you did you finish it in the pandemic?
Well, you know, I finished it in 2022. I can't remember now if that's still pandemic or not.
I think it's kind of on the edge and...
Maybe a little after.
Tell me about the cover. Did you design the cover?
I did not design the cover, no. The cover was designed by a very talented book designer named Oliver Monday. He also did the cover for the novel The Guest by Emma Klein. And Emma is a friend of mine. I really liked her novel. I know that she liked working with Oliver, and so I did suggest him to my publisher. They sent the book to actually a few different designers just to see what kinds of ideas people would come up with. I didn't have a specific idea of how to do the cover for this novel, and I really liked what Oliver did. It seemed to sort of capture the book, which is, you know, could be difficult to do. I see this eye as being perhaps the eye of Sadie.
Yes.
And this figure that is sort of dreamily floating over it in this electric fuchsia color,
mm-hmm.
to be a figure from a cave painting. And so it sort of suggests this oscillation between Bruno and the deep past and Sadie as this spy, and kind of maybe hints at genre,
mm-hmm.
because I did try to sort of borrow from what I think of as the power of noir. If you have an agent, if you have a narrator,
mm-hmm.
who is an undercover agent, then whether or not the novel itself conforms to the genre of noir and the conventions of it, she herself seems to proceed as if she's in a noir novel. And so I wanted the cover to hint at that.
Oh, it's great. I love the cover.
Oh, thank you so much. I love it too. And actually, you know, maybe you sound silly, but as we move into the Christmas season, I feel like fuchsia and this sort of olive green has a Christmassy look to it.
Nice move,
but,
Rachel.
but yeah, no, I love it. I mean, it has a completely different cover in the United Kingdom, where I've now been twice to do like book things, and there was, you know, the Booker Prize ceremony and stuff. And I love that cover also. There's just different ways of going about how to confect a visual motif or a narrative, but I thought the American cover did a really great job of that.
That's fantastic. So I know we have to wrap up soon. I do want to ask you, when did you know you wanted to be a professional writer? When you were a child, did you write a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little like caught up by this word professional. Am I a professional writer? I guess so. I mean, I'm really, really lucky in the sense that I'm able to make my living as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I ever imagined that, because it sort of seems like unrealistic thing to hope for. But I always wrote when I was quite young. You know, I wrote in journals and notebooks, and I wrote poems. I'm sometimes hesitant to make a claim, oh, I always wrote, because when you hear artists say, I always drew, mm-hmm. the rest of us did too.
Right,
so,
we did.
You know,
we might have doodled, maybe, but we drew.
Yeah, maybe, but children make paintings. They make incredible art. And maybe everybody wrote, but I was always interested in language. Then, in high school, I took poetry workshop after school and loved it, and thought of myself as a writer. Then in college, I studied politics and economics, And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And it was only after college, I didn't really want to work in the straight world. I was a bartender and a kind of bohemian.
Nice.
And it took me a while to come back to writing. And then I started taking this poetry workshop with the poet Lynn Higinian. And I thought, I do want to write. But in terms of conceiving of myself as somebody who could write and publish novels, that wasn't until much later, into, you know, maybe I was 30 years old when I really seriously started working on the novel that became Telex from Cuba, my first novel.
That's great. I love that. So where can people find out more about you?
In any independent bookstore that carries quality fiction, they will find books by me. But they can also look at my website. It's just my name, rachelkushner.com.
Okay.
Although, to be honest, I haven't really updated it in a bit, but there is stuff about all of my books there.
Well, you've been just a drop busy. I mean,
I have been.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. So Rachel's name, last name is spelled K-U-S-H-N-E-R. And I want to thank you so much for calling in and talk about your new book, Creation Lake. It is out now. And all the information is on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org.
Thank you so much. Thanks for reading the novel and for your wonderful questions about it.
Absolutely. Be well. Congratulations.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you missed any part of my conversation with Rachel, it will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. Again, the show blog is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And we're going to take a little break. If you're not familiar with KUCI, you can head on over to KUCI.org and see our complete mix of public affairs shows, music shows. We've got an incredible array of talent here at KUCI, and also our socials are KUCI-FM. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.